So we left off last time speaking about the incredible exchanges between Elisha ben Abuya and Rabbi Meir. And I think what we left off with last time is how could it be that if Elisha ben Abuya is literally hearing Shuvu banu shovu v'mchutz me'acher, so how could he be held accountable for not returning to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So if you remember, again, we gave a couple of different answers. What were our answers to that profound question? Number one. I'm sorry? Ignore it. So the Maharshal says, don't worry about the cheshbonos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's not your problem. You know what you have to do. Move forward. Yes.
Bless you. Hashem hadn't actually said it, but he had gone with that.
Excellent. Then we start off Soloveitchik, who said, Moshe never said, Shuvu Hashem chutz me'acher. All HaKadosh Baruch Hu said was, Shuvu banim shovim. Right? Chutz me'acher was the projection. Acher felt that he was so broken, that he was so spiritually demolished, that there was no way, he didn't want him. Acher didn't like himself. When you don't like yourself, it's hard to think that anyone else is going to like you. So the Rav of Soloveitchik explained that Acher projected that. Yes?
I don't know if this is wrong, but when I read the words, I thought of it as more that because he was so distant and he wanted to like keep it that way. Kind of like he heard what he wanted to hear.
So I don't know that he wants to hear it, because again, remember, you have to account for the fact that Elisha ben Avuya is learning Torah with Rabbi Meir. You have to take into it, why is he doing that? Why is he keeping engaged like that? Why is he keeping count of the steps of the Tchum Shabbos? So there is this strange dynamic that Elisha ben Avuya on one hand has left in such a dramatic way, but on the other hand is clearly keeping a foot in the world of Yiddishkeit. Why is that? The answer is, it's not wrong. It's not wrong. Remember, we're dealing now with getting into Elisha ben Avuya's head, which means the most we can do is offer up possibilities. Couldn't we say something that's absolute? Is Rav Soloveitchik correct that he projected? Are you correct that maybe he just dafka wants to stay away? Is it somewhere in the middle? Maybe it's not mutually exclusive. Maybe he wants to stay because he's too scared to come back. Anything's possible. Anything's possible. The point that I wanted to make from Rav Soloveitchik is that what he heard wasn't coming from God. That's the point. Now, whether he's projecting or whether he's just bolstering his own bad decisions, who knows? But the point is, the chutz me'acher never comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yes?
Could it be that maybe it says chutz me'acher, Hashem saying to him, I don't want you as acher, but I want to have you as a
leader? Excellent. Excellent, excellent, excellent. See, if you cared about grades, I would give you an automatic A for that. But Baruch Hashem, you're here lishma, so it doesn't matter, right? So excellent. Meaning, we're going to talk about this in just a moment. That maybe what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying is, Shuvu banu shovim chutz me'acher. Acher has no place before me. Elisha ben Avuya does. Excellent. Elisha ben Avuya has a place. Absolutely. Acher has no place. You have to make a decision. Who do you want to be? Excellent. Hold on to that. We're going to touch on that in a very profound way in just a moment. Take a look at number 13. This is from a sefer called Erpa Mishuvasam by Rav Yigal Ariel, who's a Rav in Eretz Yisrael. So here is something very interesting. It's actually the topic of this sefer is tshuva, and the entire thrust of this sefer is he goes through different episodes of tshuva and shows us what we can learn from these various episodes. So he writes over here as follows. He says, skip down. He says, "Va'amar lo yishmu aznecha masha ata medaber." So remember, he's actually quoting from the Gemara, where Elisha ben Avuya says to Rabbi Meir some statement about tshuva, and Rabbi Meir says, "You know, you should listen to what you're saying. You should listen to your own words, and you should do tshuva." Halachas kama v'kama ata sheyesh b'cha kol haTorah kula v'lama in ata osa tshuva. So again, Rabbi Meir asks Elisha ben Avuya, why aren't you doing tshuva? So remember again, we saw this Gemara. The backdrop to all of this is that Elisha ben Avuya is extolling the virtues of tshuva. And he's explicitly saying that no matter how broken you are, you could always do tshuva. So Rabbi Meir says, I don't understand. Why don't your ears listen to what your mouth is saying? You are explicit. You're teaching me. You're the Rebbe. I'm the Talmud. You're teaching me that no matter how much you mess up in life, tshuva is always possible. Great, Rebbe. Internalize your own lesson. You've messed up, and you've messed up badly, but no one is beyond salvation. No one is beyond repair. Do tshuva. So watch this. He says, V'darashas darshasa kidei shevra meir as la'an hadvar misbakshim. Ula. Look at the last three lines in number 13. This is amazing. Kasher Rabbi Meir tava mimeno lahasik es hamaskonos v'lasos tshuva. So Acher is excellent at darshaning the pasuk, explaining the pasuk, and reaching the logical conclusion. The logical conclusion being, tshuva is always possible, no matter who you are, no matter what you are, no matter what you've done, no matter what you have done. So the knowledge Acher has. What's the problem? What's the problem? When Rabbi Meir asks him to go ahead and take the knowledge and turn it into action, Chazer Elisha v'hisrachik. Elisha ben Avuya takes a step back. Lo haya bo ha'oz, la'asos es hatzad hamachria ad sofo. Anyone could translate that phrase? Lo haya bo ha'oz, la'asos es hatzad hamachria ad sofo. Oz? He didn't have the strength to act on his convictions. He didn't have the strength to act on his own ideologies. V'histater me'achori hargasha she'en hadavar taloi bo u'kvar nigzira alav gizir minashan. So there are two things that are happening over here, says Rav Ariel. Let's work backwards. So first of all, this idea that, this is amazing, and it could very well be to go to what was just stated before, which is, Elisha ben Avuya may be hiding behind this baskal. Because what if you're Elisha ben Avuya, what's the beauty of the baskal? What's the beauty of that baskal? You don't have to do anything. You're freed from all responsibility. What can I do? Even if I wanted to do tshuva, I can't. People love being freed of responsibility. Especially if I can be freed of the responsibility of my life. If I can claim that I'm a victim, if I could claim that it's someone else's fault, if I could claim that it's someone else's problem, someone else did this to me, and I don't have control, it's great. Because if I don't have control, then I can't change my circumstances. Then there's no expectations of me to be any different. Acher loves. He's not lamenting. He's not saying, woe is me, that the Baskal says, shuvu banim shovavim chutz mi'acher. He's saying, listen, this is what God says. Who am I to argue with God? Remember again, the same Acher who denied the existence of God. I just want to point out the incredible irony over here. The same Acher who says, less than, less die, and there's no judge, there's no justice. Here's the Baskal. He acknowledges that it's a Baskal. He acknowledges that it's coming from where? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And yet he says, Banu, what could I do? What could I do? I am powerless. Acher does something which so many people do throughout life, albeit in less dramatic ways, is you yield the reins of life to someone or something else. Only you control your life. Now again, you may not control all of the circumstances. You may not control all of the events which unfold around you. But you absolutely control who you are, what you are, the type of personality you create. That's what the Chazals mean when they say, Hakol b'deshai chutz miyir ha-shamayim. You can't control if you're tall, you can't control if you're smart, you can't control if you have a photographic memory, you can't control if you're rich, you can't control if you're poor, you put in your hishtadlus, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls those things. But who I am, what I am, that I control. Acher gives up that control. He sees, I don't have control, what could I do? Even if I wanted to change, I can't. Well, the moment that a person, see, essentially Acher makes himself into a victim. The Ribbono Shel Olam slammed the door in my face. What else is there for me to do? And there's another piece that Rav Ariel is bringing out, which is the concept. Anyone here taking any psychology courses? Good. Do you learn about cognitive dissonance? So anyone know what cognitive dissonance is? So cognitive dissonance is when I know something to be true. I know that it's true, but I divorce that truth from the way that I live or from my reality. So for example, on a very basic level, I might know that, you know what? I know, I'll give you a, I should not eat this piece of chocolate cake. I shouldn't. I just should not eat it. And I know that if I do, I'm not going to be happy about it. I'm going to be upset about it. But I eat it anyway. What have I just done? I've divorced my actions from what I know to be reality. Obviously, it's a very simple-minded example, but you understand the point. Elisha ben Avuya is able to expound upon the power of tshuva. And he's able to expound upon the ability of tshuva to work for anyone and everyone. Cognitively, he knows it. He understands it to be true. What can't he do? Not can't. What won't he do? He won't do it. He won't apply it. So he lives life with this knowledge, but will not apply that knowledge into his life. Now again, why? Why? Why do people live with cognitive dissonance? There's a variety of different reasons. Sometimes it's too difficult or it's too uncomfortable to assimilate actual reality into my life. Sometimes I have to make too many changes. Sometimes I have to give up certain things. I may not be ready to do those things. Whatever the reason, again, we can only psychoanalyze Elisha ben Avuya to a point. At a certain point in time, we cannot get into his head anymore. But what we begin to see, if Ariel says, is you see someone who, A, becomes a victim. Even if I wanted to, I cannot change because God has closed the door. I am powerless to change this circumstance. And the cognitive dissonance. I know it to be true, but for whatever reason, I am not inculcating that truth into the way that I live. So this marks, and again, there are a number of different examples, but I don't think we have to go through anymore because you get the theme. The theme is always the same. Rabbi Meir trying to learn from Elisha ben Avuya. Why is Rabbi Meir trying to learn from Elisha ben Avuya? Why is he doing that? Why is he doing it? Right? So two reasons. Remember, one of them we discussed, which is because he wants his Torah. Because Torah Sheba'al Peh at this point in time is Baal Peh. He wants to have his Rebbe. But we begin to see, by the way, Rabbi Meir has another agenda. What's Rabbi Meir's second agenda? Kirov. His second agenda is, I need to get my Rebbe to come back. I need to get my Rebbe to come home. I believe that there is goodness inside of him. I believe that there is beauty inside of him. And I need to find a way to bring him back. Yes?
Did his Talmidim also go?
So, interestingly enough, no. It does not appear that anyone followed Elisha ben Avuya. At least, again, from the Gemaras that I've seen. It could be other sources, but it doesn't appear that he took anyone with him. Again, he tried to take people with him, right? That we saw, but it doesn't appear that his Talmidim went with him at all. So, we keep seeing this same story over and over and over. Rabbi Meir learning with Acher, conversing in Torah with Acher, trying to bring Acher back, trying to extract as much from Acher as possible. And here's what's amazing. Inevitably, the topic of their discussion is always tshuva. Always tshuva. And by the way, who usually instigates the discussion about tshuva? You saw from the two Gemaras? Elisha ben Avuya. Right? Usually what will happen is Elisha ben Avuya, they'll be talking about whatever. Elisha ben Avuya will say, tell me, what's the pshat in a pasuk? Rabbi Meir will give the pshat in the pasuk. Elisha ben Avuya will say, well, that's not what your Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, said. And then he'll give him an alternate drasha that somehow leads back to tshuva. Elisha ben Avuya cannot stop talking about tshuva. Tshuva, 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 tshuva. It's all the time tshuva for Elisha ben Avuya. He talks about it. He understands it. He seems to want it. He seems to want it, but yet for whatever the reason, cannot actualize it, cannot actually activate it. So how does the Elisha ben Avuya story end? How, meaning his biography end? So take a look at number 16. This is actually incredibly dramatic. So the Medrash in Rus Rabba says as follows. La'achar yamim, chala Elisha ben Avuya. So what happens? La'achar yamim means sometime later on, Elisha ben Avuya is sick. Now, by the way, when the Gemara talks about sick, so sick means deathbed sick. He's on his deathbed. What happens? Asun va'amil Rabbi Meir. They come to Rabbi Meir, and what do they say to him? Elisha rabcha chola. Elisha, your Rebbe, is dying. Now, it's interesting, by the way, that they're still referring to Acher as Elisha ben Avuya. They call Elisha ben Avuya to Rabbi Meir, and they refer to him as Rabbi Meir's what? As his Rebbe, which is very interesting. Now, Azul Agabe. So Rabbi Meir comes to go ahead and visit, be with Elisha ben Avuya during his final moments in this world. Who else is around Elisha ben Avuya's deathbed? Take a guess. No one. Because remember, his family has left him. His family, as we'll discuss, his family has left him. The Romans don't need him anymore. If he's dead, he's no good to them, right? Elisha ben Avuya was only purposeful to him, to them, when he was alive and served. You know, he was the Gadol HaDor who defected to the Romans. So he's dying, we don't need you anymore. Talmidim, he has no more Talmidim, because remember, again, aside from Rabbi Meir, everyone has left him, right? No one has any level of No one has any level of relationship with him. So therefore, Elisha ben Avuya is all alone on his deathbed. So what happens? He comes in. Amrle, So this is amazing. So remember how the conversation has gone. Every single time the conversation is the same, Rabbi Elisha ben Avuya asks Rabbi Meir a question about a pasuk. Rabbi Meir gives an interpretation. Elisha ben Avuya says that's not the correct interpretation. Let me tell you the correct interpretation, and inevitably the interpretation was always something revolving around the theme of, no matter how broken you are, you could do tshuva. This time, they dispense with the formalities, because Rabbi Meir realizes that his Rebbe is about to die. So Rabbi Meir comes in with a very simple message. Amar Lei, Chazor Becha. Chazor Becha means what? Rebbe, do tshuva. You're dying. You're dying. You're moments away from leaving this world. Do tshuva. I know you believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I know you know that when you leave here, you're going to go to the Olam HaEmes, and you're going to be judged for the life that you led and the life that you didn't lead. Do tshuva now. Watch this. Amar Lei, Va'ad Kidon Mekablin. So, the first time, Elisha ben Avuya, we would have expected Elisha ben Avuya to say, Shuvu banim shovim chutz miacher. You know, I can't do it. Look what he says. Va'ad kidon mekablin. Do you think there's still time for me to Jew? Literally what it means is, Va'ad kidon mekablin. Will they still accept it now? Will they still accept it now? Which was Elisha ben Avuya asking his Talmud Rabbi Meir, do you still think that I could be a Baal Tshuva? Do you still think that they will accept my Tshuva in Shamayim? So what happens? Rabbi Meir responds. So first of all, this is amazing in and of itself, because this is the breakthrough moment. This is the first time we find Elisha ben Avuya even acknowledging the possibility of Tshuva, even acknowledging that maybe he should return, or he can't. So he's no longer saying, I can't. He's no longer playing the victim. But ultimately, again, he's saying, do you really think it's still possible? What's changed? Why the change in Elisha ben Avuya's attitude? Death, being on your deathbed, has an incredible impact on people. See, the reality is, while we're alive, we go ahead and we could pretend many things, and we could live in that world of cognitive dissonance, and we could tell ourselves and convince ourselves, when a person looks death in the face and realizes that they have moments left in this world, all of those smoke screens and mirrors that we put up to obscure the truth and obscure the MS come tumbling down, and a person is forced to face life for what it is, and forced to face themselves for what they are. So at this point in time, there's no more victimhood, there's no more rationalization, there's no more cognitive dissonance, there's a simple question. Meir, do you think I can still do tshuva? Do you actually think that it's still a possibility? So what does Rabbi Meir respond? Amar Lei, Rabbi, does it not say, V'lo k'siv, Toshev enosh ad dako, ad dikaduka shel nefesh. The Pasuk in Tehillim says, literally, Toshev enosh, a person could return, ad dako. Ad dako means until dust, which means until the body becomes dust, which is another way of saying that a person could do tshuva until the moment that they die. So as long as you're breathing, as long as there is life inside of you, you absolutely have the ability to do tshuva. Now, Rabbi, once you leave this world, once your soul leaves this body, you are stuck. If you did tshuva, great. If you didn't do tshuva, there's no second chances at that. So yes, as long as you have breath in your body, you have the ability to go and do tshuva. So listen to this. Ba'osa shah, bacha Elisha ben Avuya, umes. In that moment, the facade is cracked. In that moment, the Elisha ben Avuya, the achar facade, comes crumbling down. And what happens? Bacha Elisha ben Avuya. And going back to the point that was made before, does it say bacha achar? Bacha Elisha ben Avuya. Elisha ben Avuya begins to cry, and he died. Vahaya Rabbi Meir Sameach. And Rabbi Meir rejoiced. Why did Rabbi Meir rejoice? Va'amar doma shemitoch tshuva Nistalik Rabbi. What does that mean? Va'amar doma shemitoch tshuva nistalik Rabbi? It appears that my Rebbe died in the process of doing tshuva. Did Elisha ben Avuya do tshuva? Did he do tshuva?
No, we don't know.
We don't know. We simply do not know. Right? But what it appears is, for the first time in his life, Elisha ben Avuya begins to cry. And usually, again, those tears are the true tears of a Baal Tshuva. Rabbi Meir is besimcha. Not besimcha over his Rebbe's death, but besimcha ultimately because he feels that maybe, Domeh, Rabbi Meir can't be certain either, but Domeh, Shemitoch, Tshuva, Nistalik, maybe, my Rebbe died in a state of tshuva. It's a very, very powerful. So you begin to see, by the way, that the entire story of Elisha ben Avuya is a tragic one. It's an absolutely tragic one. It's tragic for him, it's tragic for Klal Yisrael. We lost so much, the loss of Elisha ben Avuya, and it's left with this. There's a total lack of resolution in the story either. You know, if you were to tell me Elisha ben Avuya died as a Rasha, he died as a Rasha. He died as a Baal Tshuva, he died as a Baal Tshuva. He died crying. He died crying. Were those tears of Tshuva? Were those tears of something else? Rabbi Meir seemed to have felt that they were tears of Tshuva. That closes out the Elisha ben Avuya narrative. Now, there is one more piece to the Elisha ben Avuya story, which is that after Elisha ben Avuya dies, so the Gemara discusses that there was black smoke rising up from his grave. Black smoke rising up for his grave. So it went on for a while. After 12 months, Rabbi Meir goes to daven by the grave, and he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mishpat Rishaim B'Gehenem Yud Beis Chodesh. Chazal tell us that the longest sentence in Gehenem is 12 months. And at that point in time, the smoke stopped rising from the grave. What does that mean? What does that mean? Does it mean that Elisha ben Avuya was in Gehenna for 12 months, and then after those 12 months was admitted entry into Gan Eden? That's what it sounds like. That's what it sounds like. And if you go with that narrative, then it appears that Elisha ben Avuya did do tshuva, or if he didn't do tshuva, then Gehenna somehow purified his neshama, and he was able ultimately to ascend on high. There's one more biographical piece of information, which is, after the death of Elisha ben Avuya, his daughter, a girl comes forward who identifies herself as the daughter of Elisha ben Avuya, and she goes ahead and she comes to Rabbi Meir and she says, our family is destitute, can you help us? She comes for tzedakah. Now what about Elisha ben Avuya's money? What about all the money that he acquired? Maybe the Romans took it back. Maybe his family was never a part of that to begin with. So we do see a daughter after his death who emerges. Rabbi Meir helps her out. But again, we're not given her name, and nor are we given the rest of the family history. So it appears that tragically, when Elisha ben Avuya passes away, we want to hope that he passed away in a state of tshuva. But the truth is, the reality of his narrative, of the rest of his life, his legacy, remains very much obscured. So now, you've learned the life and the history of Elisha ben Avuya, at least what Chazal tell us. Maybe there's more, maybe there are other sources, but pretty much you've seen it. Now that we've seen that, our avodah, our job is to go back to the Mishnah and to try to understand Rabbi Elisha ben Avuya's statement of in Perek Avos through the lens of his life. So let's go back to number one for just a moment. All the way back to number one. So let's look at the Mishnah again, now that you've seen the biography. Elisha ben Avuya Omer, Halomed Yeled Lamahu Domer. So if one goes ahead and learns Torah as a child, to what could it be compared? Lidyok Suva on the Archadosh, like ink written on a brand new piece of parchment. Va'alomed Zaki Lamahu Domer. And if one learns when he's older, to what could he be compared? Lidyok Suva Almiyar Machok. Like ink written on erased or smudged parchment. Okay, so now let's go back. So let's begin with number 17. So there's a number of different approaches in this particular Mishnah, and let's just go through some of them. So the Rabbeinu Yonah writes in number 17. He says, Elisha 17 Aleph. So first I'm going to show you just a couple of insights that are not necessarily connected to Elisha ben Avuya's biography, but are just general insights of Chazal into his name. So Rabbeinu Yonah, Elisha ben Avuya Omer, Halomet Torah liyelamal doma ledioksu ben yarachadash ki ein haksiva ben yarachadash yichol lelimchok kach tor shebialduso lo tishkach milibo. So what is Rabbeinu Yonah saying? What is he saying? That which you learn as a child, what? Stays with you forever. So that's actually very interesting. That apparently, Rabbeinu Yonah says, which is true, by the way, if you think about it, there are things that we learn as children that stay with us throughout life. Throughout life, right? I'm sure there's a reason psychologically or biologically why that's true. I think the Pashut idea is that when you're young, there's less stuff in your mind. And therefore, again, by definition, when information comes in, retaining it is a bit easier, as opposed to when you get older, we're often bombarded by a number of different things. Figuring out what to hold on to, what to expel, sometimes could be an avodah in and of itself. So therefore, the Rabbeinu Yonah says, very simply, what you learn when you're young, you retain. But paragraph base, va'alomei Torah lezakin amahodomeh. If you learn Torah to an old, if you start to an older person, what can it be compared to? V'diokstal niyar machuk. What does this mean? Shemehira nifsedes haksiva hahi. So apparently Rabbeinu Yonah says, what happens when you go ahead and you erase a piece of parchment and you write on it? What happens to that writing? It doesn't last. Now just to give you just, I'm assuming the reason for that is because, as I mentioned when we first started, parchment is thick. So when you go ahead and you write on it, even though it looks sometimes like the letters sit on top of the parchment, they seep in. When you erase parchment, you're taking off layers of the parchment, which means the letters sit on top, but they only have the ability to seep in. So the Rabbeinu Yonah seems to say, that which you learn when you are older is lost more easily. That which you learn as a child is retained, that which you learn as an adult is more quickly lost. Kein torshev izaknuso, mishtachachas mehira, fine. So the Rabbeinu Yonah understands this to be a din in retention. The Torah that you learn when you're young, you retain. The Torah that you learn when you're older, you do not retain as well. You don't retain it at all, but you do not retain it as well. Fine. So Rabbeinu Yonah understands this to be a din in retention. Look at the Abarbanel number 18. So the Abarbanel says, and this is actually quite amazing. Abarbanel goes on a different approach. He says, Hatane hishve es hazakin liniyar machuk. The Tana goes ahead and compares the zakin to an erased piece of parchment. What does that mean? Lo yimor. Kishem shekasha limchok es roshmo shal ksav arishon. Kach kasha lihipater meroshem shal ma'oros hachayim. What does this mean? It's actually a very profound Abarbanel. Kishem shekasha limchok es roshmo shal ksav arishon. Any ideas? Yes. Excellent. That's going to be the application. Hold on to that for just a moment. So before we get to the application, let's even simpler. What is he saying? He's saying that at the end of the day, when you erase parchment, erasing parchment is not like erasing, you know, your pencil writing on a piece of paper. Erasing parchment is a very, very, very difficult process. You have to go ahead and erase all the letters. You have to get the letters out from being absorbed into the parchment, right? And ultimately, again, what happens? Does the parchment look the same afterwards? Take a guess. No, it does not. Therefore, says the Abarbanel, here's the difference. When you are young, you're that tabla rasa. You are that blank slate. There's nothing to unlearn. You know, the most difficult part, and I'm sure even at your age, you're beginning to recognize this. As you get older, there are things that you learn, and then you have to unlearn them because they're not good. They're not good. They're not healthy. They're not appropriate. This is in the realm of midos. It's in the realm of habits. Sometimes it's in the realm of knowledge also. And that is sometimes one of the hardest things to do in life. To unlearn something. To erase your parchment. Erasing your parchment and going ahead and removing either negative traits, negative midos, erroneous information is exceptionally difficult. And when you erase your parchment, the problem is that what? The parchment itself doesn't go ahead and look the same. Says the Abarbanel, the parchment is an incredible metaphor for life. Because what ends up happening as we go through life is we write a lot of stuff on the parchment. Some of that stuff has to be erased. It's difficult to erase. It's difficult to change. It's difficult to modify the way that I live. And not only that, even if you manage to erase it, the circumstances or situations of life leave their imprint on you. It's actually a very profound idea. That if you notice, you could erase a piece of parchment as many times as you want. But the one thing you're not going to get is what? A clean parchment. Or I should say differently. You're going to get a clean parchment. What won't you get? A new parchment. The same parchment. In other words, the parchment of life changes. And this is an incredible... By the way, I'm just going to point out, this is like a little bit sobering, but we're going to see others disagree with the Abarbanel. But the Abarbanel's point is, as you go through life and you write on your parchment, there's stuff you keep, there's stuff you want to erase. But just understand, when you erase, the parchment changes. The situations of life have impact on us. And the truth is, we know this. We don't even need the Abarbanel to teach us this, because you know that when you go through a difficult situation in life, you go through a different chapter in life, are you the same person afterwards? No. Now, let's talk about this just a moment. Is that a bad thing? That you're not the same person afterwards?
No.
No, why not? Because remember, you can grow from those experiences. I'll give you a simple example. The halacha is that if someone goes ahead and does something bad to you, someone hurts you, so what's the halacha vis-a-vis that other person? What's my obligation towards that person? Reuven comes and hurts me. I don't mean, he doesn't physically, he does something very bad to me. What's my obligation towards the other individual? What? Okay, so certainly on an emuna level, I have to recognize that this person was the shliach Hashem to do, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted these events to happen to me. So I have to figure out what the message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. Good. What are my relationship obligations towards Reuven? I'm sorry? I could tell him that he hurt me, right? There might be a mitzvah of hochacha, if maybe he's going to be receptive to it. What else?
Forgive.
Okay, let's talk about that for a moment. Do I have an obligation to forgive him? Oh, so this is actually very important. If Reuven comes to me and asks me for forgiveness, then I should give him a chila. I don't have an obligation necessarily to proactively forgive someone. What there is an obligation, although you know, Rabbi Abraham Tversky has a great line where he talks, well, actually, before I get to that, the obligation I have is, I am not permitted to bear a grudge. Right? Lo sisna es achicha bilbavecha. I am not permitted to bear a grudge. That's what it is. Which, and the interesting part is, in order to not bear a grudge, what do you effectively have to do?
Forgive
the person. Now, why should I forgive someone if they don't deserve it or they didn't ask for it? Because it's good for you. So Rabbi Tversky has a great line. He says, bearing a grudge is allowing someone to live in your head rent-free. He says, you know, if you bear a grudge and you got something for it, great. This person is occupying all of this emotional real estate, taking up all of this intellectual, emotional real estate, and Reuven's going about his life, he's all happy. I'm angry, I'm frabissin, I'm this, I'm that. He is just fine. So what am I gaining by holding on to that? So the Torah says, that's what Shlomo HaMelech says, v'haser es akas milibecha. Remove the anger from your heart. Reuven doesn't deserve my forgiveness. He didn't ask my forgiveness. You're right. But what good is it doing for me to be consumed by this anger and this animosity? So the obligation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives me is that I am not permitted to bear a grudge. Interestingly enough, what doesn't God ask me to do? Oh, it's a very open-ended question. What God... I'm sorry?
Take away the memory.
Take away...
Like the memory of it.
Okay, good. What else?
Okay.
Right? Although I kind of do. I mean, he's still subject to the Haftarecha Kamocha. What doesn't he ask me to do?
Forgive.
Forgiveness is kind of a function of... I am never obligated to forget. HaKadosh Baruch Hu never tells me, you know what, get over it, forget about it, and move on. Now, there's a simple reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't tell me to forget, which is why? Because I can't. Right? This goes back to what we learned about in the last class. The same way that God can't really legislate for me to love Him, God could legislate my behaviors. He can't legislate necessarily my emotions. So to tell me to forget something may just be an impossibility. But there's another reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want me to forget. Why not? Why not? Why? How does it shape me as a person? Reuven hurt me. Good. How does it shape me?
You grew from that experience.
How? And therefore? You see, here's the amazing part. When you're hurt by someone, and all of us have been hurt by someone at some point in time, whether it's something small, you know, with a classmate, or something more major with a family member, all of us experience hurt. And the truth is, if you remember for a moment, that moment when you felt hurt by a friend, by a family member, it is the worst feeling in the world. You feel alone. You feel by yourself. You feel sometimes helpless. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I want you to remember that feeling. Not because I want you to feel bad. Because if you remember that feeling, that will shape the way you interact with others. If you remember what it's like to be hurt, then you will be more careful and more vigilant not to hurt other people. And this is an incredible yisod. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu essentially tells me is as follows. When Reuven hurts me, my obligation is I am not permitted to bear a grudge. And God says, that's for my own good. Don't give him valuable real estate for nothing. Occupy my whole head. So okay, we've just established that usually in order to not bear a grudge, I have to forgive him in some way, let it go in some way, even if he didn't ask for it, or even if he doesn't deserve it. Yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, but I never want you to forget how you felt the moment he hurt you. So you hear this interesting dialectic. I have to let go of the anger, pain, and animosity towards Reuven, towards the person who hurt me, but I have to hold on to the way that the experience felt. And by the way, we all know this is an incredibly difficult balance, because usually when you recall the pain of the experience, what's the first thing that happens after that? I get mad at the person. Which is, so again, it's all about this conditioning that, and again, that's where the Emunah pieces come in. Reuven was the Shaykh. Reuven is responsible for what he did, but obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to have this lesson because I'm going to grow from it. How am I going to grow from it? Because I have to become, by the way, what's the paradigmatic example of this? Paradigmatic example of this idea.
Yosef and the brothers.
Yosef and the brothers, how so? Yeah. So excellent. Meaning, if you look at Yosef's models with his brothers, Yosef clearly, remember again, what's the first thing Yosef says to them when he reveals his identity? Lo atem shalachtani. Right? It wasn't you guys. It's okay. It was HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What he says is, what does that mean? What do you mean it wasn't you guys? It wasn't you guys who stripped me of my clothing, my dignity, threw me into a pit like an animal? It wasn't you guys? Who was it? Of course it was you guys, but I recognize that it was from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I don't bear any animosity towards you. I'm not angry at you. I'm not angry at you. Again, you brothers, you between you and God, how are you going to fix this particular circumstance? But I don't have any anger towards you. Because I have learned from, remember again, it's amazing. What does Yosef go on to do after his brothers sell him? He goes to Mitzrayim. What's his job in Mitzrayim as he rises to prominence? Second, what was his job? I'm sorry? To take care of people. Isn't that amazing? He had to provide food to keep people from starving. The man who was betrayed and hurt by those who were closest to him, the man who wasn't taken care of by the people who should have cared for him, himself becomes the ultimate caregiver. That's what it means to grow from. I hold on to that. I know what it's like to be alone. I know what it's like to be hungry, to be cold, to be by yourself, to feel betrayed, and I will take that sensitivity with me into every single thing that I do. In fact, again, we have another example. What's the other example of this? Zechiras Amalek. Why is there a message to remember what Amalek did to us? This will be your first Shabbat Zohar, first time. Right, why is there a mitzvah to go ahead and remember what Amalek did to us? Is it to remember anti-Semitism? Is that the goal, to remember that people hate us? You don't have to, you don't need Parsha Zohar to remember that people hate us. What do you need to do? You can open up a newspaper and you can see that people hate us. We know there's plenty of anti-Semites, plenty of anti-Semitism. Hey, remember, where did Amalek attack? The behind, right? Amalek attacked from behind. Amalek attacked Kol Anecha Shalim Acharecha. They attacked the stragglers. If they attacked the stragglers, that means that there were people that we were not looking after. There are people who are lagging behind the camp who we did not look after. So we remember ultimately in order to what? In order to sensitize ourselves that we can't allow any stragglers in Klal Yisrael. So ultimately, again, what we begin to see, so to bring this all the way back, what the Abar Banel is saying, and by the way, this piece you should know is probably the most important yisod to keep in, most important fundamental idea to keep in mind in relationships. Because I'm going to tell you something that's going to sound very, very, very harsh, but it's true. If there is one thing that you could count on in every single life relationship, it's what? I know this is going to sound like a terrible thing to say to young people. That the people you love will hurt you. Now let me qualify that for just a moment. What does that mean? Relationships are between human beings. Human beings are finite and imperfect. So at some point in time, someone who you love is going to do something that you perceive as bad, something that you perceive as not good, something that hurts you, something that slights you. That's part of the human condition. It happens with parents and children, children and parents. It happens in marriages. It happens with friends. Think about it. Think about it. If you have one life relationship where the person who you love never did something to you that hurt you in some way. Impossible. Impossible, unless you're in relationships only with tzaddikim and tzidkaniyos, then maybe. But if you're in relationship with regular people, so what happens? So what's life all about? Life is all about saying, okay, this happened. My job is to forgive, my job is to not bear a grudge, to forgive, and to take the experience with me and use it to allow me to shape my other human interactions. So what the Abar Ben El is saying over here is exactly this. As you get older, there's all kinds of stuff written on your parchment. And a lot of them ultimately, again, have to be erased, have to be rewritten. Some of them have to be erased and not be written. I'll put the chair over here. Some of them have to be erased and not rewritten. But that's the challenge of life. When you're young and your parchment is clear, your parchment is clean, anything you write is beautiful and pristine. As you get older, the dynamic is writing, erasing. Does the parchment look the same after a certain point in time? And the answer is no. In the Abar Ben El's model, there comes a certain point in time where the parchment is just erased. It's not as beautiful as it once was. Doesn't mean it can't be great. Doesn't mean it can't be fantastic, but it's going to be erased. Take a look at number 19. So Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau was the former chief rabbi of Israel, current chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. So he wrote a beautiful parish on Pirkei Avos called Yachal Yisrael. So in it, he says as follows. And this is amazing. So first of all, I'm going to go on record as saying the Abar Ben El is not my favorite parish on this, because I'm bothered by the notion of being stuck with an erased piece of parchment. So I'm telling it to you because it's the Abar Ben El, and obviously it is something to be said, but I'm also going to say we're not going to see it this week, but next week in Rosh, we're going to see a counter opinion to this. Yes?
Why is the Abar Ben El saying negative? It could be positive too.
It can be. I'm saying personally, I'm not a fan of it. Because I like the idea of getting new parchment, not living life with erased parchment.
But who said a new parchment is always better?
Because that new parchment smell is always better than erased parchment. Clearly, again, Elisha ben Avuya is saying that. That's the Mishnah. The Mishnah is that new parchment is always better than erased parchment. Right? That's the premise we're working on, because that's a comparison. Right? New parchment looks more beautiful. New parchment retains the ink better. So clearly the qualities. It doesn't mean that erased parchment is not good. It doesn't mean erased parchment can't be beautiful. But clearly, again, at least from Elisha ben Avuya's model, new parchment is always better. So take a look at number 19. Barosh Kol Tzar Overes, another understanding of Elisha ben Avuya. Now remember, again, I want to point out, we're just seeing interpretations that aren't necessarily linked to Elisha ben Avuya's life experiences. So look at number 19. Barosh Shal Kol Tzar Overes La'achas HaMachshava Kol HaChayim Lefonai Be'is Ena Me'achayim Achar Kach Eses HaMutal Alai Yesh Li Maspik Zman Ba'asid L'malei Es Chovasai Lebori L'chevra. So what happens? So Rabbi Lau writes as follows. When we're young, so what do we often think to ourselves? There's plenty of time to get my act together. There's plenty of time. I have my whole life ahead of me. There's plenty of time to fulfill my obligations. There's plenty of time to accomplish the things that I need to accomplish. Kineged machshavos me'ein eile, masiras ha-mishnah, al tomer l'chishe efne eshne, sheba lo tipona. That's what we see elsewhere in the Mishnah, where the Mishnah tells us, don't say when you have time you'll learn, because maybe you'll never learn, maybe you'll never have time. So the idea being that the greatest challenge in life is procrastination. And procrastination yet seems to be part of the human condition. Why get serious? Why do the things I have to do now? There'll always be some time in the future. Look at the second paragraph, number 19. Mosifa Mishnah Sinu Vameres. Our Mishnah adds on to this motif and says, Gam im tispane ba'asid. Even let's say you procrastinate and you get around to doing what you want to do in the future, Shuv lo tasik es masha ata mesuga lahasikeis. This is an amazing statement. You will not be able to find later on the opportunities that you have in front of you now. You will not be able to find later on the opportunities you have in front of you now. Eino dome limudo shel hayeled lelimudo shel hazaken. So listen to what Rabbi Lau is saying, and with this we'll conclude. Rabbi Lau is really highlighting something amazing. What does Elisha ben Avuya say? If you learn as a child, it's like ink written on new parchment. Learn as an adult, like ink written on erased parchment. So, Rabbi Elazar says, what's the message? The message is that different stages of life present different opportunities. And if you miss your opportunities at one stage, will there be opportunities at a later stage? Will there be opportunities at a later stage?
Yes.
Absolutely. But what? But what? They're different opportunities. They're not the same opportunities. The opportunities you get in life usually only come about at a certain time, in a certain way, under certain circumstances. If you choose not to take those opportunities, that's fine. There'll be other opportunities later on, but those new opportunities will be sometimes dramatically different than the opportunities that presented themselves beforehand. And this is an incredible yisod. Because what Rabbi Lau says is really, this is not simply about learning Torah, although we've already seen that. This is about life. This is saying when you're young, there are certain doors that are open to you. If you take them, great. You take the opportunities, fantastic. If you don't, see what happens. No one usually ever says, I'm just too lazy right now, I'm not going to take my opportunities. What do people usually say? I'll get to it. Right, I'll get to it, because we operate under the assumption that I could like hit the pause button on life. And so, okay, I don't want to take the opportunities now. I'll be ready sometime later on. And when I'm ready, those opportunities will be available. To which Elisha ben Avuya says that is unequivocally false. The opportunities which present themselves to life, the opportunities which present themselves to us at a particular stage in life are usually associated with that particular stage and are only associated with that particular stage. If you fail to take those opportunities, you will have other opportunities at other stages in life, but those opportunities at the later stage will be different than the opportunities that you had at an earlier stage. And this is an incredible yisod in life. Because essentially, says Rabbi Lau, what Elisha ben Avuya is teaching us is opportunity knocks every single day. And very often, what do we tell opportunity? Right? I'm a little bit busy right now. Right? Can you come back later? Can you come back later? And opportunity will come back later, but it's not the same opportunity. So if an opportunity presents itself in life to do something great, you have to take advantage of it when it presents itself. Because even though, again, remember, this is a beautiful message, because it's not saying if you don't take advantage of your opportunities, that's it. You're never going to have any in the future. You'll have plenty. There are opportunities at every stage in life, but they're never the same. So in your youth, you have one set of opportunities. In your older age, you have another set of opportunities. Take advantage of the opportunities in youth, because you only get them during youth, just like you'll take advantage of your opportunities during your old age. But if you chas v'shalom, go ahead and procrastinate taking advantage of your opportunities of your youth, thinking that they'll be available to you at some later age, that unfortunately is unequivocally false. Because once the door closes, it closes. Now the good news, Baruch Hashem, is what? Other doors open. It's always true. There are always doors that are open, always opportunities that are available. But once the doors of opportunity close, the same one, almost, never opens a second time. And the truth is, you'll see as you get older, sometimes the biggest regrets that people have in life, you see this, I see this all the time, even very successful people and very accomplished people and happy people, most people walk around in life with that little bit of pain because of the door they didn't open. The opportunity they didn't take advantage of, and it's no longer here. Now, Baruch Hashem, life presented them with many other opportunities. Maybe it was Hashkacha that they didn't take. I don't know, who knows what the Ratzon Hashem is. But at the end of the day, you go through life, and as you go through, there's always that door that was open. I didn't go through because I was too busy. I thought it would be open later on. I came back. Now it's closed. And it's heartbreaking to me that it's closed. There are other beautiful doors that are open, but unfortunately this one is closed. The message being, take advantage of the opportunities which are presented to you at every different stage in life. Because if you don't take them at the stage in which they present themselves, they will not be available to you later on. There'll be other opportunities, different opportunities. But if you don't seize them, if you don't go through the door when it's open, once it closes, it never reopens in the same way. All right, we'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up one more class in Mirat Hashem on this Mishnah on Monday, then we'll move on to the following Mishnah.